Hello, and welcome back to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris. Today, we're going to have the second part of the interview with Ben Hunt Davis, the Olympic gold medal rower that I interviewed on the show last time. We continue the story from where we left off after winning the Olympics and then what he had to do afterwards, because most people kind of plan for the goal, and then once you achieve it, you have to sort of get on with the rest of your life. And he had quite an interesting situation, not really having any qualifications and anything, and having to work out how he could be useful to the world and make a living besides just doing rowing. It's a really fascinating interview around the mindsets that he then learned and the skills that he learned in rowing and how he was able to apply them elsewhere in his life. And I think there's going to be a lot of useful things for people, because I feel like we all kind of search for what is the point of our lives and how we're going to be our best selves. So it's a great set of lessons, and he's got some top tips for everyone. We rejoin the interview where I ask him about how he balances family life and trying to get married and things around the whole Olympics at the same time.
We got engaged 15, 18 months before the Olympics, and we planned to get married 3 weeks afterwards. Yeah. So I had quite a big month. So a week in Australia after racing for the rest of the Olympics, week in England, going out, having fun, seeing friends, family, getting pissed. Mm. Then a week in Italy, vaguely trying to help preparations, although my mother-in-law had done it all. Then we got married. Then we went backpacking for 3 months, I think. Backpacking around India, Nepal, Tibet. Came back. My wife was pregnant. I had no job. We were living with my dad. And it was time to kind of grow up and get on with life.
Yes, and it's funny because you think like someone that wins a gold medal is probably knowing what they're doing with their life. But
I had no plan past my wedding day. I thought that I'd stop competing after Sydney. And as soon as I crossed the line, I knew that was it. But what came next, I had no idea. And at that point, I was 28. I'd never had a job. I had no qualifications. I dropped out of 2 university courses. If I had have lost, then I really would have nothing going for me. And I came back and worked pretty hard and getting a job. And it took 5 months to find a job. And then I got on with the next thing.
It's really important, like, if you want to do something sort of like public speaking and stuff, they say you should always have a story to tell. That's obviously winning an Olympic medal is a pretty good story. But do you think you maybe could have worked out a different story if you had one of these coaching?
So I didn't want to tell a story. I didn't want to do speeches. I joined a training company called SI Group, and they had, we call ourselves performance coaches. I mean, we ran these training courses, these mindset behavior change training courses. And then there were a few people who did speeches who weren't sports people. They just did speeches about mindset, and they were really good at that. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be a, what we call ourselves, coach. So, which was effectively running training sessions. And I worked for them for 2.5 years. And there were some groups I spent probably 8 days with, those spread over a number of months. And by the time I'd finished these 6 or 8 days with them, they would think that I was an enthusiastic rower, but they wouldn't know anything about the fact that I'd been to the Olympics or not, because I just didn't want to talk about it. I wanted to be good at the job for being good at the job rather than what I'd done before. Yeah. All the other coaches I worked with, there were 15 or so in the company. None of them were sports people. Mm. They all had come from different business backgrounds, and they were just really, really credible and good because they were good. And I wanted to be credible and good at doing my job because I was credible and good, not because I had a history behind me.
Makes sense to like not take the easy option, to kind of build like your whole base to then sort of be able to work on that and grow it. So back to like your original like what worked, what didn't work kind of thing. It sort of, it would have worked if you'd said like, I'm an Olympian, but then you'd never have got that far because you'd have always been too weak in the other aspects. You wouldn't be able to like deliver on everything.
We had these, these training courses. Knowing the content was obviously really important. Being able to kind of challenge and coach and facilitate was important. Being able to entertain and engage people was really important. The kind of presentation style. There were loads of bits that I just wanted to be. It was a great environment for me, actually, because I was, you know, I'm quite competitive. And I went into this place and there were, say, 15 or so other coaches, and they were all really good. And I was rubbish. It was very clear. I knew nothing. And my competitive instinct came out, but rather than trying to beat people, it was about, and you know, you can't compete against people in terms of running courses, but I wanted some self-respect to going, you know, I want to be as good as these people.
Cool. So what, your like biggest lessons then as a coach than how to like facilitate things or how to coach people and deal with like the things that asking difficult questions to kind of get the most out of someone. Like, how did you learn that skill?
Slowly, I think. I mean, I read or listen to quite a lot of stuff. I've been on a few courses. I've learned a lot from watching other facilitators. I think that being willing to ask the difficult question is really important. And there have been some situations where I have asked a question being quite sure that it would lead to me not being engaged with that client again. But I think you've got to be honest and you've got to say what you think and you've got to ask the right questions. I think straightforwardness and honesty are pretty important. And yeah, the job of a coach, of a facilitator is to make people aware of what's happening, either what they're doing or all the other stuff that's going on around them. And sometimes that means people learn stuff they didn't think they wanted to hear. But if you've got more information, you can make better decisions. So having an ability to ask good questions and the courage to ask them sometimes, I think, is quite important.
I've certainly learned a lot about that, like doing the podcast. And it's been quite useful. Sometimes I get people that I maybe don't want to interview that much, but because I'm not so bothered, I'll be a bit more ballsy to just ask them difficult questions. And it ends up making it like a really good interview, even though I wasn't expecting anything. Whereas if it's someone like I know really well and is famous, I'm a bit like, it's a bit harder to be like really cool about it. Okay, so where do you see the field of coaching in general going, and like in 5 years' time, do you think there's going to be a bit of a shift in the way people do it and like what businesses are focusing on to get the most?
So I think 20 years ago, no one was coached in a business environment. 15 years ago, it started to grow. 10 years ago, it was going absolutely berserk. I think that now, if companies are paying for coaching, they want it to be far, far more business focused. And they've got to be very, very clear business outcomes. I think businesses have been through phases of trying to teach staff internally to coach individuals better. And I'm not sure how successful that's been. I think being as a manager or a leader, having a certain coaching capability is good. I think there's a huge move to learning being more computer based. There are also things you can learn digitally. And when it comes to people skills, there's got to be human interaction. Yeah. So I think coaching and kind of learning and development, I think more of it will become digital, but there is still a massive need for human interaction. But it's got to be more closely tied into businesses, and they've got to know they're getting good return on investment.
Are you guys working to deliver more digital stuff and to deliver more like specific outcomes from your face-to-face work?
So digital, we're going to look at in the second half of 2020. We've looked at it a couple of times, and we're going to have another look. And we are really outcome-led. And we will continue to be so, and we will work to measure it even more effectively. I think that teaching somebody some leadership skills is totally pointless unless they have the opportunity to actually do something with it. I think people are so busy at the moment. Skills for the sake of it, no one uses. Definitely. So actually, it's got to be tied into your specific situation. So the application bit of learning is, I think, is critical.
Yeah, definitely.
Knowledge for the sake of it is lovely. Definitely.
People ask you, like, what's the best book to read? And you're like, well, then what are you doing right now? Because if you read the right book at the right time, it's like insane. But if you read like a book just for knowledge and it's not appropriate, it's just pointless.
You don't do anything with it. And knowledge for the sake of it, in some situations might be useful, but in terms of a corporate development thing, knowledge has got to be specific. It's got to be totally applicable. So we spend huge amounts of time with people working on, how are you going to apply it? That's kind of the understand, practice, apply bit. You know, if you want to learn about bullshit filters or bounce back ability, you know, I can teach you all areas you need to know in 5 minutes, but that doesn't mean you can do bullshit filters. It doesn't mean you can do resilience. It means you might have some knowledge about it. And actually, the only thing that matters is being able to do it. So all our theory is really simple theory to try and give people the maximum opportunity to apply it.
Can you explain what they are quickly? Or
bullshit filters. So focus is really important, but there are so many things that distract us. People telling us, oh, we can do, you shouldn't do this, you should do that. Yeah. There are so many different distractions. And when I was rowing, we came up with this thing about bullshit filters, about kind of these imaginary ear defenders. You can whack them up to maximum deflection and the bullshit just wouldn't get through. So when people were telling us that we couldn't do it, that we weren't good enough at that, we weren't strong enough, we couldn't do this, it was bullshit. It just wouldn't get through. We wouldn't listen. Effectively, we'd be going, la, 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 I'm not listening to you. Because it wasn't, if the goal was about boat speed, people telling us we couldn't do it wasn't going to help us achieve that. Therefore, we didn't want to listen to them.
So as in like having a really good mission statement would be a bullshit filter if you always go back to your mission statement going, hey, is this going to make the company get to this? And if you're like, oh no, then it's a distraction.
Then it's a distraction. Therefore, I'm not going to engage with it. I'm not going to listen to you telling me that I can't do it. If you're going, you know, I think you need to work on this or this or this, or you've got these weaknesses. Now that's helpful information that'll help me achieve it. But if you're just telling me I'm rubbish, that's just not helpful. So that's bullshit filters. Stuff invariably will go wrong at various times. How do you make sure you get back on it as soon as you possibly can and start performing? Because if you're deflated, demotivated, pissed off, frustrated, feeling lethargic and flat, you're not going to be performing very well. So your results aren't going to be very good and you're unlikely to achieve your goal. So when stuff goes wrong, how do you learn from it, pick yourself up, dust yourself off so that you can get back on to performing well to give you a chance of getting a result? And depending on how bad the setback is, will probably take time, different amounts of time to recover from it so you can be firing on all cylinders again.
Is there anything that I should have asked you that I haven't asked you about?
I don't think so, no.
And then on the subject, actually, when I was asking you what's the most difficult thing to ask you, what do you think might be the most difficult thing to ask me if you were coaching me?
I have no idea, Sam. I'm afraid I just don't know enough about you. I don't know what you're trying to achieve. Having had a 5-minute conversation beforehand, I'm afraid I'm not a good enough coach to be able to know exactly what the right question is because I just don't know you well enough.
Okay. How do you think I could have improved this interview?
So I've done a few podcasts before. This is an observation rather than this is what you should do because I don't know the answer. A lot of people come with a more structured approach, whereas you've come with a pretty open approach. You've made loads and loads of notes as we've gone through, which you've kind of referred to, and that's kind of led to the next question going on. So the people I've done podcasts with before haven't made notes in the way you have done. So I'd say that's kind of a really good thing. The, you know, possibly knowing more to... if you know more to start with, then does that shape it? And it means you don't...
Yeah, that's my issue. And I find sometimes with my guests, especially when it's someone who is kind of famous, I'm less likely to ask difficult questions if I know them really well kind of things. And I'm not sure if I sort of read your book and I was like, wow, I'm going to meet Ben, this is amazing. I might have been a bit scared to like be me. Whereas if I'm just like, I meet this guy, I don't really know who he is.
Maybe on the other hand, if you had of read something, then maybe you would know which different questions. So then the bit about being worried about asking the difficult questions, I would say that, you know, maybe that's something you should think about. Because why should you possibly be worried? I don't know what the worst that can happen is, but probably not that bad. You know, people approach things in different ways. So, and I don't know what works for you. I guess I'd say, you know, preparation. Is that something that would help? I don't know. That's for you to figure out. It's a bit about kind of asking difficult questions, about why, what's to stop you asking difficult questions. Because the person at the other end can always just say no. I'm not going to, or answer something completely different. But unless you actually have the courage to ask it, you'll never, you haven't got a chance of getting the answer.
I guess like trying to find the right balance is interesting, and like at what kind of point in the interview you're in and stuff. It's like, I'm not sure what's really appropriate and like a difficult question, because I could ask you like what your favorite sex position is.
So, just to explain why I said such an out of place thing. Sometimes I have this issue where my brain comes up with like a bad idea that it shouldn't do. And normally, I just ignore the bad idea. But then sometimes it's such a bad idea that the rest of my brain, it starts panicking that I might do it, and it will like be screaming at me like, you mustn't say this, Sam, just don't do it, never say this thing. But the problem is then that I kind of run out of brain space. I've got this one option of something to say, and the rest of my brain is occupied just telling me to not say it. And it's just like I go into like this blue screen of death, and I can't really think of anything until I say the stupid thing that I thought of, so that I can actually get my brain back. So you shouldn't really say things like that if you can avoid it. But I can confirm that if it does sound awkward in the interview for the next minute or so, that's because it is. I was totally out of line saying something like that, and we both didn't really know where to look. I basically wanted the ground to eat me. Somehow, I did manage to get the interview back on track, but trust me, I was rather beating myself up the whole time, and you shouldn't ask a member of the Order of Excellent British Empire about their favourite sex position, obviously. Anyway, enjoy the rest of the interview, and my heartfelt apologies to Ben.
But like, I don't know how I can ask you like a difficult question as such, as in maybe, I feel like going into what you'd have done with if you hadn't have won was kind of interesting. Don't know if that was difficult at all as such. What do you think was the biggest thing you've got wrong in life?
I've treated a few people really badly. I think I've been a bit of a bastard to a couple of people, and I really regret that.
Do you think there's anything you can do to, like, fix that now?
Well, I haven't had the courage to anyway. Let's put it like that.
If I said, like, your number one goal for the next 2 weeks is to fix that, what do you think you would do?
I'd have to figure out how to get hold of them. I guess instead I feel bad about some relationships I've had and just don't do anything about it.
Do you think there's lessons you've taken away from that which have helped you now that you change the way you are?
Yeah, I think so.
Can you give an example of, like, how you show up in life now because of this?
I try very hard to treat people well. I try very hard to. And as a business owner, when we have to make difficult decisions about people, we try very hard to do the right thing and to treat people really well. In fact, at any point, we work really hard to treat the people who work with us decently, properly, fairly, openly. I think it's really important.
Yeah, you seem like you came across like that. I was a bit surprised when you said that you treated people badly. It was not of all the things that I thought you said you'd have might have got wrong.
That's what I regret most because I think it's really important. So that's why I regret most.
That makes a lot of sense. Really quickly, what's your probably earliest memory ever from childhood?
Earliest memory from childhood is a house I lived in Hong Kong. I've got some memories from a kind of first time I went to Hong Kong, where I must have been 3 or 4 or something. I've got kind of vague bits of memory about a swimming pool, about the house I was in, the kind of the vague bits of memory.
What's the kindest thing someone has ever done for you?
We had a team of volunteers around us who all gave up huge amounts of time and energy to help. I mean, people have been incredibly kind. Before the Olympics, we needed to, 3 months, 4 months before, we needed to raise some money to buy a new boat. Wrote to a whole load of complete strangers who a number coughed up a whole load of money. And since then, I've had, there are people I've asked for help and they've given it, or people who have just said, you know, can I do this for you? Or, you know, who give time and energy. So I think loads of people have been incredibly kind.
Cool. Thank you very much.
All right. That's a pleasure.
Really good having you on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Well, wasn't Ben such a nice guy? If you want to hear more from him, you can read his book, Will It Make the Boat Go Faster? Or you could contact his consulting agency, where they'll come and help your business be really sensible and stuff. And I'm just really happy to be able to revisit this interview, because I find that it doesn't matter what I do in life, I always sort of look back at myself and think, wow, I used to be so stupid, and now I know things better. And when I revisit interviews from before, I feel like I often completely miss half of the lessons that I'm being told. And later I'm like, damn, that was the truth. Why did I not get that then? And that certainly happened with this interview, where I acknowledged Ben's points around me being a more organized person and thinking more analytically about my life and being prepared for stuff. And it's now really been biting me in the ass lately, and I really do need to start doing this better. And I'm like, okay, I am organizing my life, I am planning my days properly, rigorously, I'm going to be planning my weeks, because of I'm just doing way too many things, and it's just making a mess of stuff by lack of planning, and like my business, my podcasts, everything. So thanks, Ben, I'll be doing that better now. And then the bullshit filters also directly relates into the whole planning scenarios. And the phone's going off appropriately, so that's time for me to stop the podcast and go and answer it. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.